Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Loose Units, Loose Ends. I'm Paul, that's John, and good God, Dad, it's good to be back, isn't it?
I'm literally erupting.
Right, how would you describe, like, what does that mean exactly? You mean you're just excited, you have lots of energy?
I'm excited, or? I'm bursting out of my skin.
Sure, okay.
I want to express genuine, and this is a pretty sort of, not a weird word I'm going to use, but I want to express love to our listeners all over the world. And we've had a break. I think it's been our first break in 2.5 years.
It's been a long time. And we did lockdown. We did the whole COVID thing for, about 2 years. Two episodes a week. Mm. No breaks. And I
was suffering. Look, I understand why we had a break. Mm. And I truly, now looking back on the break, I feel good about it.
Yeah.
But when you suggested... Well, we suggested that we have a bit of a break. I suffered pangs of kind of, I was a bit, oh God, I was down.
Like pre-withdrawals, you know?
Pre-withdrawals.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, because it's so sort of in my DNA and I was at a loose end. Mm. Can you imagine being a loose unit at a loose end?
Yes, every day. But what's interesting is the withdrawals you're describing, right?
Mm.
Did you get anything like that when you quit the police force? Because, I mean, as far as I can see, your entire career has been you trying to deal with the withdrawals of the rush that you got from being a cop.
The listeners will recall every time I saw or heard a police car go by after I'd left the New South Wales police force, I suffered. I suffered, you know, I was extremely depressed.
Mm.
And... And I seriously considered rejoining. But then I thought, hang on a sec. You know, I looked at why I'd left the police force.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, look, it took me years. And funnily enough, when I left the fire brigade after 10 years, I would not look at fire engines, even though they'd be going past me, you know, under lights and siren.
Mm.
I would avert my gaze.
Really?
Yeah, I just, because you know that I'd recognise the fireys and they'd, you know, they'd wave, and I just needed to get it. I needed to have that clean break. Right. And speaking of averting one's gaze, Christine and I, we were having coffee. In fact, Christine's still having coffee as we speak. I saw something coming towards me. Or in my direction, and I was so shocked. I was standing away from Christine. I was on the phone. I said to Christine, have a look behind you. I said, just, you have to look. And she sort of twisted around on the seat and looked up the hill, and about maybe 15 meters away was a person walking down towards sort of all the people in the coffee shop on the footpath, and that person, I wasn't sure whether they were going to stop for coffee or keep going. And this person, this guy, he was wearing, basically, colourful underpants. And they were super, super tight. And I was literally staring, but I was aware that...
Sorry, Dad, you mean just underpants?
Oh, he had like a silk, tight, silky satin singlet.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was hallucinating. I probably asked Christine to have a look as well because I needed to confirm that I wasn't hallucinating.
Right.
But as this person, and they were wearing incredibly large, oversized sunglasses, and they were on the mobile phone, and completely oblivious to every single person on the footpath, literally just jaws dropping. And I couldn't avert my gaze. And I looked down at this particular person's... it's so funny because you... Anyway, the point of the story, Paul, is that because we mentioned averting one's gaze, like I couldn't look at fire engines for some time.
Right.
But then I realized, and I did a double take because this guy's right testicle was sticking out of his underpants.
No, it wasn't.
It was. It was extraordinary. I was focused on his crutch. And as he walked past me, I then was thinking, is this cool? But it was such an extraordinary sight. Isn't that an amazing story?
You know what you need to do is just, if you need to tell him so he can tuck it in.
He was walking like a male, like a model on a catwalk.
Right.
They have that certain walk.
Yeah, that confidence.
I don't think he realized that that was the case.
Sure.
And he'd obviously forgot to, or inadvertently left it out.
Mm. Well, maybe it's like the style, you know, like parting your hair to the side.
Yeah. Yep. It could catch on, but I mean, doesn't that strike you? And of course one's quite conscious of the fact that one is staring. And because of his massive glasses, mm-hmm. I couldn't tell whether he was actually looking back at me.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, that's the story. It's just a local story, but
okay, yeah. So after our first break in 2 years, the first story you tell is about a man's testicle.
Hmm.
Okay.
Look, I know it sounds weird and wacky, Paul, but, you know, that's a good way to break the ice.
Yeah, well, now that the ice is broken with a large nut, I think what I was going to do is run through the Facebook page because we haven't really touched any of the wonderful things that people have been posting over the break that we've taken. And, Dad, apart from people begging for us to come back, which we are, by the way. Oh, yes, let's just reestablish things. Loose Units is back. So we thought we'd start with the loose ends this week just to kind of break things, you know, just to set things off. And we'll be back next week with more episodes. So Loose Units, the drought is over. We needed a break. We were burned out. You know, everyone needs to kind of stop and just take a moment for themselves. So we've had some us time. We've done some pampering, some manicures, some mani-pedis. So we're feeling better. So Marie on the Facebook page shared this story, and this isn't a funny story. It just taps into something that you mentioned quite a few times, Dad, back when you were in the fire brigade and when we were doing Hot Stuff Coming Through, which I believe was season 3 of Loose Units. So I will read the headline. This is from ABC News on the 16th of January, which is one day after my 39th birthday. Oh my God, I'm feeling old. Here we go. Volunteer firefighter 19 charged with deliberately lighting 9 fires in Perth Hills. A 19-year-old volunteer firefighter has been accused of deliberately lighting multiple blazes, including one that sparked a major emergency on Boxing Day. Now, I'm not going to read his name, but he's appeared in court charged with deliberately lighting 9 fires between December 23 and January 15. Among those blazes were the December 26th Wurrulu fire, which destroyed a house and several sheds. That fire occurred amid an extreme heatwave with many more homes barely saved. Now, I know that you've said before that a lot of firebugs join the fire brigade. But, I mean, 19 seems pretty young. And also, that period is that's the hottest time we have, right?
Look, Paul, if you're a pyromaniac,
yeah,
in other words, you go around lighting fires, but quite a few of these people derive
sexual pleasure
from just the thrill. And I think it's fair to say that if you and Tegan are sitting in winter in a beautiful country retreat, glass of wine in hand, maybe reclining in nice bean bags, for example.
That's very specific, but go on.
Yep. And you're looking into the fire, you have to admit that it's hypnotic and just bloody wonderful to look at.
Yeah.
Now, just imagine that sensation of feeling that this is quite... Because fire is, it's amazing. And, but imagine taking that to the next step and seeing a massive fire, knowing that you lit it. Then you can stand back and you can watch all the emergency services. And you might not have the initial intention of causing serious harm. In fact, I suppose if someone dies as a result of your actions, I imagine the grief would be intense unless you're just a cold-blooded psychopath, which is possible as well. But
so the objective from an arsonist, is it to... It's not to kill people with fire, is
no,
it?
No.
It's just to light the biggest fire possible.
Yeah, so and also, but it can be also for insurance purposes.
Right.
I mean, there was that shop owner in Balmain that lit the fire, but unbeknownst to him was the family upstairs.
Oh, fuck.
And they all died. And that was arson for insurance purposes. A very, very, very common offence, particularly with motor vehicles.
Yeah.
And like these gangland shootings that are happening up in Sydney, you know, the two gangs, they're doing these sort of midday assassinations, basically.
Just wind it back, Dad, because I'll be honest, the news for the past, you know, however many years we've been engaged in whatever you would call this period in history has been a bit of a bummer. And I know a lot of people use loose units to kind of escape from that stuff. Mm. And I have taken a break, not just from loose units, but kind of from pretty much any news that isn't COVID related has been stuff that I've been avoiding. Mm. So can you please enlighten me? Because I didn't know about this.
Mm. This is an ongoing saga in Sydney.
Oh.
Between two families.
Yep.
And it's a tit for tat thing. So, you know, imagine if it was the Verhovens versus the Higginbothams. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
We were two crime families.
Yeah.
And I know that Tegan's mum and dad, I mean, I haven't been there, but I know they live on a property in regional Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
So that would create certain problems in terms of me bumping off one of their relatives.
Right.
Okay. I mean, seriously, think about it's a small town, I believe they live in or near. So the mere fact that it's a small regional town, it kind of makes it difficult to assassinate. So you'd have to come up with various, you know, techniques. So I managed to sort of commit a crime where initially you might just want to scare someone in the family. It could be over a debt, could be over drug territory. There are many, many things these things start off over. But if I managed to succeed, then the Higginbothams, they will want retribution. It takes a very, very big person to say enough is enough. So these things escalate. So the Higginbothams then come up to Sydney and they then take out one of our family, and then these things just, they continue. And that's what's been happening in Sydney. People are being gunned down. But I was kind of, the connection to arson was that all the motor vehicles that are used in these crimes are always found burnt out to destroy all forensic evidence.
Right.
That's the level these people work at. So yes, it's been a real problem up here. And I guess one of the things about these family gang feuds is that they really, like the mafia, do have a philosophy or a code of silence. And the police are more than aware that they will get no information. So the families, the criminal networks here in Sydney, and it would definitely be the same in Melbourne and every capital city and probably every place across the world, these families, they keep things within the families. And it's very, very difficult for the police to prosecute. Because there, even if there are witnesses to these crimes, there's a terrible fear. I mean, Paul, if you and Tegan were...
I know you want our families to get engaged in a blood feud.
No, but hear me out. Imagine if you and Tegan are enjoying a brief interlude on your balcony, for example, and you witness what is undeniably a gangland killing.
Right.
Okay. I mean, you would really have to be very, very assured by the police that if you gave any information that you would be protected.
Mm.
Because you're dealing with some very, very scary, in fact, probably the most scary people in society. And they do work on levels that are quite, and they work on fear. And, you know, you would have to, and I'm not saying, you know, don't sort of share information as to what you saw, but I mean, there was a case just recently in Sydney where a guy had just got out of jail, and they've got CC footage of it, and it's quite extraordinary. A car rocks up during the day, five guys get out of a car and kidnap this guy.
Jesus.
Okay? And they held him for 3 days, and you can only imagine what he went through. So, but they let him live. And, you know, to sort of say to everyone, look, we don't muck around. But can you imagine that just innocent bystanders that happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, witnessing this incredible, frightening, dramatic, real life, not TV. This is not fiction. This is something, and you're right, just standing there, and you're thinking, shit, what do I do? And do I take, you know, you grab a registration number of a car, knowing that particular car within 30 minutes will be well alight, probably in an industrial area.
Mm.
So it's, mate, it's incredibly creepy. And I know that you have an aversion, which is so weird because the whole concept of the whole loose units, I mean, you write about grisly stuff. And I also know that it's upsetting, and I agree. And I think it's been good to have had a bit of a break as well from all that sort of stuff.
Well, the actual crime families, so it's the Hamzy and the Alameddine crime families.
Yep.
And apparently it's like a long-running feud. And the last... Yeah, so it looks like it's been going on for quite a while. But this is in the Sydney CBD.
Mm.
Jesus. Well,
mate, there have been people that have come out of really, really crowded restaurants at nighttime.
Mm.
Like, we're talking major venues that I did, in inverted commas, normal people go to. And, you know, there was the case where the guy walked out of this very famous restaurant at nighttime and he was just shot on the steps of the restaurant.
Yeah, apparently there have been 30 major violent incidents between gangs over the past 18 months, which is like a lot. And I'm looking here at photos of burnt out vehicles, there's assassinations, ambushes. Jesus.
It's really, really. And I have, in my picture hanging business, I've worked for a couple of these types of people.
Yeah.
Have I ever mentioned that?
No. Yeah. No.
Mm. I have a few clients that, oh boy, mate, it's really scary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I have worked for, if you're a really bad person, let's say you're a rapist or a murderer or a pedophile or a psychopath or a multiple mass murderer, you know, these people, they do live in houses, and some of them, believe it or not, like paintings, like art. And some of them have shitloads of money.
Of course.
And if you want to offload some dirty money, some cash, you can go to the casino or you can go to an auction and buy some really cool art. And that's a really good way to launder shitloads of money. And then when it comes to hanging the beautiful paintings that are worth a lot of money in their magnificent houses and penthouses and amazing places that I've been into, what do they do? They could hang it themselves, or they could get someone in like me. So I have been into some of the most extraordinary situations that, I mean, I have worked for a guy every single time I've seen him. Now, he's got three permanent bodyguards. Three.
Right.
And they are with him wherever he goes. All his cars, and I don't want to sort of sound a bit cheesy, a bit corny, but they're all black. They've all got tinted windows. They're all registered interstate. And this guy moves frequently. And if you ever Google any of his locations, because I've tried to do a little bit of sort of research on the QT, it's just a blur. His house is blurred out on Google Maps.
Right.
Which I think is fascinating. And yeah, I get to see some interesting things. And one guy in particular that's been shot quite a few times.
Yeah.
And this may interest you slightly, Paul, and that is that I invited him to the book launch.
No,
I didn't tell you about that. But yes, I invited him because I didn't want him to find out about my background. So I was very, very open with him.
So you thought, you didn't want him to find out you're a cop, so you thought the best way was to hide in plain sight and invite him to a book launch where there was a book being written about you being a cop?
Yes.
Or
And it's so funny because I'm not going to sort of go on too much about this to you and the listeners, but this is a little bit of... I'll just give you a snippet of something that I find kind of slightly exciting in a weird way, and that is that this particular guy has been shot, okay? He was shot quite a few times, but not with the view of killing him. They shot him in a particular part of his body. It was pretty bad. And he's got a bit of a limp. And the first time I met this guy, one of his bodyguards came up to me and said, he just kind of weirdly wanted to explain to me why his boss was limping.
He
said to me, which is so weird, he said, he fell off a ladder. And I thought, well, no, he's clearly been shot. And because I could see some of the bullet, the entry wounds.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was rather sweet. I'd love to tell you a lot more about this particular person, but I won't, because I've got to be very, very cautious. And bearing in mind also, Paul, that, you know, I have a client in Sydney and they've got two panic rooms. Okay?
Yeah.
And a panic room is, as we all know, a place where if there's a home invasion, they can get into this room, hit this almighty big switch, and a 3-inch steel door locks them in.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that extraordinary, Paul?
It's bananas.
To think that you actually, there are people in this city that live their lives in a perpetual state let's face it, it's fear.
Mm.
So there is an underbelly.
Would you ever consider getting a panic room?
No, not on your Nelly.
Oh.
Never.
Right.
I couldn't afford a panic room. Hmm. And look, no. But it's incredible. So yeah, I get to see and mix with some, you know, so if you're a really bad person, one should never make the assumption that you can't have very, very, you know, good taste and a fine sense of the aesthetic. It's not something just for, you know, just for the, yeah, it goes across the board, good taste and bad taste, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, they say money can't buy taste, but if you met someone who was a horrifying criminal, yeah, it sounds like you have.
I have, definitely
do,
have, yeah.
Do you have any moral compunctions about taking their money?
That's a very, very good question. Not always. But funnily enough, Paul, and it's weird that you've touched on that, is that recently, and I've got to be exceptionally careful because I know that some of these people do listen to the podcast, but I recently, I dropped a client.
Interesting.
I dropped a client on moral grounds.
Really?
Let's put it that way, yeah. But I'd love to tell you and everyone about a bit more about this particular person, but I'm just going to say that he has benefited because of COVID.
Right.
He's involved in a very grubby industry. Yeah. But I work for another client that moves every 6 months. He only lives in penthouses in Sydney.
Right.
And he's a very unusual guy. And he's very, very unusual. He can't be in the place when I'm working. He just leaves money on the table and he just vanishes. And he's a mysterious, fascinating, you know, guy with the most extraordinary art collection. I mean, I have been into private houses in this city and I've had to sign confidentiality agreements prior to going in because I've been told that you will see art that is significant on an international stage and no one knows where it is. So whenever you see in great textbooks, amazing images of extraordinary paintings, and at the bottom it says, this is a private collection.
Yep.
I have seen a fair bit of that stuff. And there's so much money floating around. And, you know, as I said, it's the most amazing way to offload, you know, dirty money.
Yeah, of course. Because, and plus, I find it so interesting. A lot of people who have, you know, really horrifying acts that have gotten them their money find... Do you think it kind of sates their conscience a little bit and also makes them feel like they are kind of... One of the kind of core kind of dilemmas at the center of the organized crime film genre, you know, stuff like The Sopranos and Goodfellas, is that they are trying to get as much money as possible to live up to some ideal of being better than they feel like they are. Like, you know, the whole thing of pursuing the American dream, trying to just have as much stuff as possible to legitimize yourself. Do you think the pursuit of art comes from an actual love of art, or do you think it comes from them trying to be part of a class, like a class level, that they feel like maybe they can't reach otherwise, right? Like, does that make sense?
It does, but I also firmly believe, Paul, that it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter about your level of education. If you have... I mean, okay, Australians are renowned in our incredible numbers for going to art galleries and museums. Yeah. You go to any art gallery in this country, go to the NGV, go to the Art Gallery of New South Wales, go to the magnificent galleries in Adelaide, every city, you know, Brisbane with their Indigenous collection. They're always packed.
Yeah.
People love beautiful art. And like I say to people, there's a great chasm between great art and, you know, you go to your little sort of weekend sort of amateur art show in a hall in some suburb, you know, and you stand and look at that art, then you are taken to great art, and that the chasm between people just have an innate sense of what is magnificent. And yes, art is an amazing way to, aside from the fact that, I mean, you can, I mean, a lot of people buy art for investment, no doubt about it. I hang a lot of investment art. But, you know, if you're going to have it in your house, you know, on your walls, like for example, you and Tegan, you've got some bloody awesome art that, might I say, I've hung for you. And it's, you know, it makes you feel, it just makes you feel good. And, but conversely, there are some incredibly wealthy people out there that have got no taste in art at all. And sometimes I hang absolute, you know, not the best stuff, which makes me cringe a little bit, but, you know, it's also subjective. But back to my point, it's a very good way to offload art. But speaking about sort of like in Sydney, we've got organized crime, and a lot of people that live on the North Shore, that children go to some of the best schools and the eastern suburbs, some of the best schools, you know, in Australia. If you say $40,000 a year is an indicator of a great school, but something that's going to make these people feel a little bit creepy and crawly and make them feel a bit weird is that a lot of these organized crime sort of criminals, like the crime families and a lot of the, for example, the bikie gangs, their children go to the best schools in the country. And they're dropped off at these incredible schools in the big black, Range Rovers, etc. So I think it's not weird, but I guess if you're a criminal and you've got shitloads of money, maybe you think, I would like to at least give my children a really, really good education. But also I think they feel that it's sort of sanitizing.
Yes.
Their sort of their lifestyle. You know, if look, it's so, just so, so fascinating. Oh, I heard a very, very disturbing story. Very, very disturbing story. From a source, one of my clients. And when I heard the story that I've never told you, Paul, and I certainly haven't told the listeners, and that is that at the height of COVID in Sydney, a particular, let's say, crime family, I'm talking about when things were absolutely 100% locked down. You couldn't do anything. A particular group of, and a fairly big number of this sort of criminal organization, they went to one of the very best hotels in Sydney, and they just went to town, and money meant nothing. They splurged. They had an incredible party, and when I heard that story, I was deeply offended and upset because I realized that this particular sort of five-star hotel was complicit, and it made me also think that these people have utter disdain for the rules. And, you know, it made me sad, I guess. And so there are, you know, lots of things that happen behind the scenes. And yeah. If you've got lots of money.
I know, Dad, that's not just organized criminals. I mean, I'll close out with this. So part of when COVID started, yeah, when it actually just kicked off and we're all a bit like, oh shit, what's this? And the lockdown stuff happened. This story hit about a Melbourne woman who got COVID while she was on a ski holiday in Aspen.
Mm.
These were just like rich white people who lived in Malvern and Toorak and stuff, and got on social media and posted photos about it, and they had money and they didn't give a shit and they spread it, and they didn't get raked over the coals by the media. They didn't cop it like anyone else did, because, you know, rich people do shitty things and shitty entitled things, and I guess it doesn't really matter what side of the tracks you're from or where you get your money from. If you're rich, you will, I think, inevitably try and bend the rules for yourself. And I think that's the cause of many problems. So, yeah, I don't think this is a class thing. I think literally, if you are rich, there's always a risk of you just kind of abusing that, you know. And it really does shit me up the wall that people did that with COVID, you know, and throw huge parties and do all kinds of stuff and not get penalized like the rest of us did. But, you know, it happens. It happens. And it's entirely possible that the Aspen dickheads and the organized criminals maybe have very similar art tastes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dad, we have covered so much goddamn ground in our first episode back, and I'm really glad we started with loose ends. It's been nice to just sort of shoot the shit and go off topic, but we did get to crime. We got there, you know, eventually.
Paul, yeah. I'm so stoked to be back, and I feel, you know, it's like putting a glove on. It's just it's a perfect fit.
Yep.
I'm really. It's kind of. I don't know whether the people. I just want to share this tiny little thing with all our listeners, and that is that, you know, it's become such a part of my life that when I am talking to you on the podcast,
yeah,
I feel super relaxed and chilled with you, and I feel we relate really, really well, and I feel really comfortable, and it's like sort of a fireside chat with a dear friend, and it's unreal. But then sometimes when I actually am with you face to face, it's kind of a bit. Do you get that sense that I can't quite put my finger on a pole?
No. Can I? Dad, I've thought about this. I think I figured it out. It's because we do some. I think we've kind of broken our brains a little bit with this podcast. What's happened is we save the real. We save We save the fun stuff where we actually want to talk and chat like friends. For the fucking show. So when we talk in person, it's all really perfunctory business stuff.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
We don't.
Oh, God.
And it sucks because we can't, because, but, and I talk about this occasionally with Tegan. It's like before the show, you and I would call, we'd talk and we sounded like really happy to talk to each other. The second we talk on the phone now, it's like, when are we doing the next thing? Okay, okay, 8:30. And then it's just like brief, almost rude texts of just like numbers and yes and no. But the real father-son stuff happens on the mic. And there was a time where we would start talking on the phone and we'd start telling jokes and having fun and we'd literally go, save it for the podcast. And we still do that. Are you worried that we've killed our relationship?
No. No, the fact is that I'm glad to hear you say that because that makes me feel somewhat more comfortable because it has been bugging me a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's really, really good, and it's just weird. It's like a switch, isn't it? It's like this sort of, you know. But would I be able to finish with a joke, Paul?
Yes, please, please.
Okay, so a rabbi. Oh fuck! Shit! Fucked up. A rabbit, a Catholic priest, and a minister walk into a bar. And the barman says to the rabbit, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "I'm a typo."
Here's the dilemma, listeners. Do I edit out the bit where Dad fucked up and gave the punchline? Of course I don't. I'm not going to pretend I didn't hear it.
All right, mate.
It's important that we're all here for the creative process and for the candor that comes hand in hand or with Loose Ends. Thank you so much for listening to the return of Loose Ends. We're going to see you next week for more Loose Units. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Make sure you tell every single person you know that Loose Units has roared back into your life. Share, like, subscribe. Go back and listen to old episodes. Do it. I mean, Dad and I have been going through and finding our favorite episodes and re-listening because we're psychos. Anyway, have a great weekend, everyone, and we will see you next week for more Loose Units. Bye.
Cheerio.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.